And thank you again to everybody else that's read, that's helped us open the meeting this evening. Take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Particularly welcome to any visitors to our meeting this evening. Nice to have you with us, and a huge welcome to any newcomers that might be with us. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So we do have a speaker tonight, and I'm going to hand you over to Jay, who's going to introduce them. So Jay, over to you.
I'm an addict. My name is Jay.
Hello,
Hi,
Jay.
Jay.
Hi, Jay.
Hi, Jay.
Hi, Jay.
The individual that's speaking tonight, I've known 38 years. Maybe longer. I've watched her grow in this program. I've watched her blossom in this program. We have cohabitated multiple times under the roof I'm sitting in, and our relationship is, I don't think I'd be here if it. If she hadn't come back into my life when she did, she's my sister from another mother, and we have just weaved in and out of each other's lives forever. I'm going to see her in a couple of days, and it'll be the first time I've seen her in 3 years physically. I look forward to that. I'm going to watch her children graduate high school from the same school that I graduated from, which just blows my mind because it doesn't seem like it's been 4 years since all that happened. And it's 4 years, and they've grown up. The twists and turns of life are amazing. And the people that have been here for me are, I mean, she is definitely one of the people that knows me better than most. And she just celebrated a major milestone. I'll let her tell you about that. Without further ado, Dawn, would you share with us?
Did I unmute? Am I unmuted?
You did.
Oh, hi everybody. My name's Dawn and I'm an addict.
Hi,
hey, Dawn.
Hi, Dawn.
Hi, everybody. Jay, thank you for that introduction. I was going to say, if you started boo-hooing on this, I'm going to slug you in the arm when I see you this week. So let's see. First and foremost, it's an honor and a privilege to share anywhere. But this particular meeting, and there are people currently that are members of this group and that are here visiting, hold a really special place in my heart. And I need to say that and acknowledge that because there was a time that long before COVID, pre-COVID days, you know, that my life was really busy and I would come to this meeting. And so there are some people in this meeting who live across the pond or in different country across the pond that when I hear their voice, it makes me smile. So I just need to say, I'm so glad you guys are here. Now, okay, so I probably should say my normal disclaimers. This is my experience, strength, and hope in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. And that some of the very basic things that we learn about when we first get clean still hold true for me today. One, don't use no matter what. Two, go to a meeting. Three, get a sponsor. Four, call the sponsor. Five, work steps. Six, do the best you can at any given moment in time. Probably seven is, it's just for today. So, if you're new, you never, ever, ever have to use again. For those of you who've never heard me, you know, I get very pretty emotional because I'm so filled with gratitude about what the program has given me and what my predecessors did for me and what I continue to do today. So, you know, I'm an addict. That pretty much levels the playing field in this meeting. You know, I did all those things that our literature talks about, in and out of jails, in and out of institutions, substituting one drug for another, substituting one step. Listen, I did it all. You know, and so including death. I've been clinically dead twice. Long before there was, you know, helpers, that's what I call it, Narcan and all that other stuff. You know, and so I was introduced to the fellowship, not this one. I was introduced to our parent fellowship when I was 14. Because, you know, in a blackout, I put two police officers in intensive care and I had a bag full of drugs and blah, blah, blah. And so I was kind of court ordered to go to a meeting. Now, I should have known my very first meeting when that woman, who was probably 35, stood up there and told my story. And I was like, oh, hell no, this is not me. I'm too young. Because I looked around the room and there was nobody anywhere near my age. I mean, I thought, this just can't be happening. So I went in and out of the rooms and in and out of a whole bunch of situations because, you know, I was terminally cool and I was hip and I just didn't, you know, somewhere probably around 18, I decided that I was an addict and this is what addicts do. And that I would rob, steal, lie, cheat, sell drugs, do drugs, you know. And so I went into treatment in 1981. I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous because I went to the World Convention in Miami. This is a funny part of my story. I was in treatment, and I ran around that convention checking the coffee pots because I knew there was shit in that coffee pot beside coffee. Because everybody was happy, and they were all hanging out, and they were all smiling. So, you know, my warp mind, there was something wrong with them. There was something in the coffee because they were all drinking coffee. You know, I started looking good and feeling good. Now, this is my history in and out of the rooms from the time I was 14 until the time I was 20. I could never get 90 days because I'd start looking good and feeling good and I was out the door. In the other fellowship that I went to, they would call me the tornado because I'd come in and then I'd blow out. See? May 19th, 1982. This is the last day I used. And I'm saying this because one is, I don't know how I got here. It's not true either. That night, in a blackout, I almost killed my baby brother. And the next morning when I woke up, I was at my mother's house, which she didn't, you know, that was on one night because she'd kicked me out a long time ago. I can tell you this. For a split second, this kid that I raised hid behind my mother. And for 30 seconds, approximately, give or take, I saw my disease on someone else. I saw it. Can't explain it, but I saw it. Now, I raised this kid. You know, I was like his mother. And for those 30 seconds, I saw the disease. It was 10:30 in the morning. I was still pretty, not in my right mind, shall I say. I went to where I normally knew to go. I went to a noon meeting from our parent fellowship. And I haven't had the need to use since. So that was that part. That's what got me here. Now, and so I don't know how I got 39 years. And I can tell you I do, because I did it one day at a time and did all those things. But I'm still in shock about it. I mean, I'm still like, nah, if something's wrong. Did I miss part of my life? Because I have 39 years in the fellowship. However, in my head, I think I'm 27 or 28. And my body's pretty good, too. So I'm into, I don't know how this happened. But I'll get to that later. So they told me don't use and go to meetings. They told me to keep my mouth shut because I didn't know anything about staying clean. And everybody in the room knew about how to get loaded. Now, at the time, there was meetings in Miami. The oldest meeting is in West Palm in the state of Florida. And so that was Mainline, and I'd go to that meeting. And then my sister started a meeting in Boynton. That's still going. And then there was a meeting in Lake Worth. Now, that's the county. So everybody went to both fellowships. And I didn't care because of this. I had a disease. My disease was yours and more, and it didn't matter what it was. I also realized that I needed to use recovery like I use my substances. And so I used every day, all day long. So I was coming up on 90 days. I had 86 days. I was in this wonderful, loving, kind, nurturing relationship. That's being sarcastic. He didn't want me to go to meetings, so he started hiding the car keys. He hid the distributor cap, finally hid the car, and I would just walk. I mean, I was so determined to go to meetings that I didn't care. What happened was I never got 90 days, and I was terrified I was going to use. And I went and begged to go back into the treatment center that I was in, and they told me to come on Tuesday. And Tuesday at 5 o'clock in the morning, I was banging on that door. Because it was, I think that was day 87. And so I was like, okay, if I'm in a safe environment, I'm going to be okay. Because I still didn't have the concept of, as long as I do what was suggested, I'll be okay. You know, I still didn't have that concept. I just knew not to use and go to meetings. That's all I knew. I didn't know how to be honest or how to be a friend or how to, I didn't know any of that stuff. I was what you call a low bottom. I was animal. I hung out with the men because the men did the things I did. Not that I can manipulate the men, but they thought and they acted like I did. And the men, it really taught me how to be, you know, they were pretty good for me. They told me don't get in a relationship for the first year. Guess what? 18 months. You know, I was doing whatever they told me to do. I had the gift of desperation that brought me to my knees is the precious gift that kept me on my feet. My gift of desperation. They told me to jump, I jumped. They tell me to walk to California to go to meeting every day. I would have done it. I would have done whatever they said. Because I wanted it. I wanted to stop hurting. You know, I was so tired. And I was beyond beat up. And I was not even human. You know, so I did it. I did what they said. Now, somewhere around, I don't know when. So, you know, some people came from Ohio to tell us because we don't know how to run a fellowship in Florida, blah, blah, blah. So then this is what happened. Around 3 years and 3 months exactly, I had a spiritual crisis, for lack of a better word. And I was doing everything I was supposed to do, and I was miserable. I was absolutely miserable, but using in my head was not an option. So every night for 2 weeks, I tried to kill myself. And I tried because I'm still here, so you can see how good I did that. But I was in a relationship. I was married. And he would go to bed and I would get up and I would try to kill myself, and me and God or this power greater than myself or whatever, it was really the air in the back patio. We'd have this full-on battle on my knees. And so, and in the morning I'd wake up and I would pretend everything was fine. Probably the, I think it was day 14. Day 14, I was so beat up and I was so done that I think that's when I really did my third step. You know, I made a decision. I didn't take it back. I didn't let things go. I just made a decision to turn my will and my life, all of it, over to this, whatever this was. And that my thing was always this. If whatever this, you know, because I was raised Catholic, God and I were not on good terms. Whatever this was that supported the sun and the moon and the stars, that supported palm trees and life and supported our fellowship, whatever it was, I just surrendered to it. And then I became absolutely crazy in the fellowship, because that NA was the last place on the block. So some people in this room know, you know, I don't like what you're saying in my meeting. I'm getting a new coffee pot. I'm going to start a new meeting. That's so much. I don't know what spiritual principle that was at the time. But as a result, the fellowship grew and grew and grew and grew and grew. You know, and when I got clean in the United States. And so it was us and California, you know. And so probably in the last 10 years, I'm into the World Fellowship and the United States. You know, there's some stuff with that. I'm not really sure what it is, but I can tell you this. I know that I'm going to promise I wasn't going to cry. I know that there's an addict who's hurting somewhere in this world that doesn't know that there's hope and that there's a place for them to go and that they never have to use again. And that the disease of addiction is not exclusive. It is not. You know, it doesn't matter what color you are, what race you are, what sex you are, what gender identity you identify as. It doesn't matter if you're 14 or you're 50. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you live in Vermont or that you live in the Sudan. It doesn't matter. It doesn't care. And that I have watched our fellowship encompass that. I have seen it and experienced it. I have, and I'm so grateful. You know, I'm so grateful that there might be somebody like me or you who doesn't know about us, who's going to die not knowing that there's hope. And so I'm very grateful for, one, this platform. And I'm saying this platform because I've been to meetings all over the world and I haven't left my living room. And I've met some really incredible, wonderful people who are just like me that I might not ever physically get to hold and hug their neck. But like when I hear them or I see them in a room with me, I know that they're my people. Not that I own anybody, but like, I've had interaction with them. They've shared experience, strength, and hope in meetings I've been with. They're like me, and I'm like them, and it's wonderful. You know, and I think that, for me, that's important. So, because I'm looking at all the people in this room on my little technology, and like, you know, I have some type of experience with 90% of the people in this room. And some people I've never even seen. And so, but I know that you are me and I am you, and we're all trying to do this together. And so for that, I'm grateful. So, you know, the first 10 years of my recovery, I was Listen, I go to a convention and every year I look like a different person because I was short. My hair was short. My hair was blonde. I was wearing glasses. I was wearing contacts. I was gaining weight. I was losing weight. The only thing that didn't change was my height. But everything else was so, because the first 10 years of my recovery, I was trying to find myself. You know, I did all the things and I was involved in service and I, you know, went on road trips and we did 12-step calls and I went to work and I was married and, you know, we were Mr. and Mrs. N.A. and I did regional work, blah, 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 blah. Looking back on it, I'm so, so grateful for my first 10 years because it allowed me, one, to grow up in the fellowship. You know, just because I put down the substances did not mean that I was insane. You know, did not mean that I had some serious character defects. Did not mean that I wasn't going to step two. And the other thing about all of that is I was not so necessarily kind and loving. Because I was afraid that if you said certain words or did certain things in my meeting, that my house wasn't going to survive. So if, you know, I didn't have any patience or tolerance with people. They used to call us Nazis because I was. I mean, I was like, don't say that. I mean, I probably drove a lot of people out of the rooms because of my fear. My fear was this. If I didn't have a place to go, if I didn't have an NA meeting to go to, then I was going to use, and if I used, I was going to die. Or if I used, I would never be able to get back and I was going to live in a vicious hell. I couldn't decipher which was which. The other thing is something happened in those first 10 years. I have people that I have, besides Jay, I mean, I have people that I have known my entire recovery. I mean, I have lifelong friendships that have, like, people I grew up with, and it's pretty amazing. It's just really pretty amazing to me. You know, I still do all the things I'm supposed to do. You know, my second decade was, I was batshit crazy then, too. That's when I owned the bar. Oh, how you like that, you guys? You know, I'm in recovery and I own a bar with some other people. And I don't just own a bar. I own an adult entertainment club. And that my sponsor fired me and told me to get rid of all the people I sponsored because I was going to use. And I did it. Never do that again. This is what I can tell you about that experience. People in the light don't need the light. And GEDs and college and getting out of the business and people got recovery. I mean, there's people that I, you know, have double digits in recovery from that experience. And then, you know, there was people who came in on Monday afternoons at 1 o'clock and sat at the bar and bring a meeting. That's what they said. However, I don't know if that's true. But I was so into that they came and we talked recovery and we sat at a bar, an adult entertainment club, every Monday at 1 o'clock for a long time. And I'm grateful for that. You know, I wouldn't strongly suggest that you work your program the way I did. I have this amazing life. I mean, absolutely amazing. You know, so I got married and I went to Russia and I adopted my two children in recovery who are going to graduate high school. And, you know, I had all the things. I had a multi-million-dollar business and two Harley Davidsons and all this stuff, three houses, blah, 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 blah. What happened was is that my ex-husband wasn't enough for him, and he started dealing drugs. And so in 30 seconds one night, my whole life flipped upside down, and I lost everything except for my recovery. I lost everything on the outside. And so this is what I can tell you about that whole experience. One, money, property, and prestige diverted me from my primary purpose, and that was to be clean, to stay clean, to practice spiritual principles. Now, I went to a meeting a week, and I don't know if I was, I might have been sponsoring one or two people at that time. However, I wanted this marriage to work because I was in love with the idea of this family and all, whatever, all this outside stuff. Well, it wasn't really outside stuff, because this is the only thing I've ever wanted in my whole life. I wanted to be a mom since before I can remember. I wanted to, I have this thing about a community, that we help each other and we heal, and not necessarily a commune, but something like that. And I wanted to be in a partnership, not be necessarily be married, but to be in a partnership. And so I thought that I had that. I thought I had, I went, we, I thought I was in a partnership. Well, I was not in a partnership, in that form, because we all know that, substance use, addiction takes precedence over everything, including cars and houses and families and children, blah, blah, blah. And so in 30 seconds, I lost everything, except for my recovery and my children. I mean, he tried to take my kids. And my life got turned upside down, and what happened was I was brought back to the basics. I left Georgia because I was living in Georgia, and I moved back to Florida. I went and lived with my family and took 2 years and healed. I then went back to Clearwater. That's where Jay lives, everybody, if you ever want to visit him. I'm not going to tell you the address, but that's where he lives. So I went back to Clearwater with my kids, which was really good for everybody concerned. And then I, when I went back to Florida, it was like coming back to the fellowship. Like I got really involved. I got a new sponsor. I got involved with Frickna. I did all this. I got a home girl. I mean, I was just, first of all, I was grateful. And second of all, I was grateful. I was really, really grateful. I'm still really, really grateful. I got to meet some people who came across the pond because of my service work. I got to reconnect with some people I got clean with. I got to meet new people. I developed a strong sense of community. I started sponsoring people again and like formally work in steps with the people I sponsor. I'm sitting here thinking about that time, and I'm thinking, they say that lost dreams awaken when you come in the rooms, and this is, and I'm gonna get emotional again. I went back to college. I went and finished an AA degree. I went and finished a bachelor's degree, raising kids, going to work. That's reasons why I love this meeting, because when I was doing that, this was one of the times that I could go to a meeting. I could go to a meeting because I had kids in middle school, and I was in college and I was working, so Saturdays I could go to a meeting and not leave the living room and put the homework on pause and come to this meeting. And it was the same people, and it was really wonderful. And then my kids got out of middle school, and higher power, Buddha, great mystery, Jesus, antimatter, whatever you want to call it. I don't want to offend anybody. God, goddess, I when they graduated out of middle school, in less than, I don't know, Jay could correct me if I'm wrong, probably in less than 24 hours, I was moving to Vermont. I didn't know how I was getting here. I didn't know any of that. You know, somebody asked me a question, and I asked somebody else a question, and then before I knew it, higher power and I are screaming and yelling in a living room about, you got to be effing kidding me if you think I'm moving from nice sunny Florida where the beach is 10 minutes to the frozen tundra of the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont. And so I said something like, you better give me a sign. And so the sign was that the only NA meeting was in Dr. Bob's childhood home. And it is 7 blocks from my house. And that's when I knew that, you know, my higher power was putting me somewhere where I didn't know anybody. All my support's down there, and that there was a meeting 7 blocks from my house. And that's all I really cared about. Sunday night, some Sundays I'd be the only person sitting in the parking lot. I would go to meetings in Littleton, which is about 20 miles away. I came up here. I got my master's degree. I work in the field. I am a clinician. I deal with newcomers every day of the week, which I absolutely am so grateful for. And I'm not their sponsor, and I'm not any of that. But, like, I get to see their lights come on. You know, I get to see when, like, they come out of the fog and that little flicker of hope comes, you know, and I get to see when, you know, they come in with their 30-day key tag and that they tell me, Dawn, you know, I know I'm not supposed to talk about this with you, but I think I found this person to be my sponsor and I'm going to start working steps. You know, I get to experience all that because I let everybody know that I'm in long-term recovery. I don't necessarily tell them I'm in NA, but some of them I do, because they're addicts like me. And so besides clinical and my job, you know, my primary purpose is to help the addict who still suffers. And I see them all the time. And I see the disease out and alive and well, you know, and I can tell you that I'd probably have a relapse in me, but I know this much. I do not have another recovery in me. So I do all the things I'm supposed to do. I go to meetings and I help people and I pick up the phone and I become vulnerable. And, you know, my disease today is very different than when I first got clean. You know, my disease is plots and plans. It doesn't say, hey, Dawn, let's go get loaded. It doesn't say that. It says things like, you don't have to go to a meeting today. And it says things like, you know, so-and-so lies to me one more time. This has to do with work. You know, I think I'm going to zap them. And then I start plotting and planning in my head of how I'm going to zap them. You know, and what happens is recovery always steps in and says to me, Dawn, can you tell me what spiritual principle that is? Because that sounds like resentment and ego. Today, I'm getting ready to do a fifth step again with my sponsor tomorrow. And I'm doing a fifth step on another area of my life, which is scarcity and fear. See, because I'm not using chemicals, but my disease is still alive and well. And so, you know, I have stuff from my childhood, which is there was never enough money. I went to bed hungry. So, you know, I have a tendency to stockpile when stuff's on sale. And so I don't have it because I'm afraid that there's not going to be enough. And that is a lie that I've lived with for so long that I decided I can't do this anymore. The universe provides for me constantly. There's always more than enough. And I live in a world of abundance and not in a world of scarcity. So I need to address this. I also know that that's part of my disease. You know, part of my disease says it's not enough. There's not enough. It also says I'm not enough, which is a big fat lie. Because the universe doesn't make junk and we're all perfect just the way we are right here, right now. You know, I was thinking about, I got a text this morning at 6:30. Can you please speak? So, which is always good for me because I don't have to think about anything. I just say my prayer. Please just let me be an instrument. Please help me to share my experience, strength, and hope. So, when I said, you know, I got 39 years and I don't know how I did it, and that's not true. You know, I know how I did it. And I, if anybody heard anything that they could help them, I'm grateful. And if you didn't hear something, come back. Because sooner or later, you're going to hear something that you need to hear when you need to hear it. I can't ever put into words how grateful I am for this fellowship. I can't. I have this amazing life, stuffed with feelings, crying on the thing, you know, kids getting ready to go to college. There's a part of me that wants to have a party. That I can come to meetings and see people I haven't seen in 4 years because my life showed up. You know, I thought about this. This is really for Jay and everybody else who knew this person. There was a person when we first got clean. He had more time than we did, and he was very instrumental in the fellowship. And this is what he used to say: NA, Narcotics Anonymous, and working the steps is designed to give you a life, not to be your life. And it took me a long time to understand what that actually meant. And today, when I was making coffee, I heard his voice. It's like he was sitting in my dining room. And so I can tell you that today I have this most amazing, spectacular life. I look at myself in the mirror and I'm into, you're not a scumbag, you're not an animal. Like, you're a complete, total human being who's growing, and that you have good days and you have bad days, and that, you know, this is never ending. If somebody tells you that, oh, you're going to wake up with 35 years or 20 years, or you're going to get to this place where it's going to be, oh, you don't have to work the steps and you don't have to live the steps, and you don't have to grow and change, they're lying to you. It is an ongoing daily process. You know, Living Clean, it says, I think it's that one. I don't quote literature too much, but it says that recovery is a lifelong full contact process. And that's what it is. It's lifelong, it's full contact, and it's a process. My name is Dawn and I'm an addict. And today I am not necessarily an old timer. Today I am an experienced member of Narcotics Anonymous. And I hope that I was able to convey my experience, strength, and hope to you. And that everything can happen. Life beyond your wildest dreams can happen. And that for that, I'm so grateful. Thanks for letting me share.